10% of our nation's freshwater is in danger of permanent pollution. This is our Inheritance podcast, where we focus on stories about conserving our planet's natural resources. We explore different accounts of wildlife, nature, restoration, and rehabilitation in our changing climate. In today's podcast, we will explore the history, beauty, and ecosystem of the Boundary Waters of Minnesota. We'll also dive into recent events that have put the safety of the Boundary Waters in danger, and the incredible efforts made by organizations to protect this natural wonder. Located in northeastern Minnesota on the border of Canada, the Boundary Waters contain 1 million acres of wilderness encompassing more than 1,000 lakes, streams, and rivers. These intricate water pathways offering over 1,200 miles of canoe routes makes this area formerly known as the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. On top of canoeing, other popular activities in this otherworldly destination include some of the best freshwater fishing in North America, 12 hiking trails to choose from, and over 2,000 designated campsites. 8-time Boundary Water goer Dale Hansen says it best by saying,
Boundary Waters are just like a pleasure vacation.
Though I've never personally gotten the opportunity to visit, I've got a former volunteer for the organization of Friends of the Boundary Waters, Reese Willoughby, who offers his delightful insight to his experience.
My experience with it is that it's a truly special and kind of incredible place.
There's a reason why it's the most visited wilderness area in the U.S. You get to share unparalleled time with your friends and family where there can be no one around for miles on end. You're just completely alone in the wilderness. You get to drink some of the cleanest water on earth. I would say my experience has been it's a truly amazing, incredible place that you get to form great memories with friends and families and grow yourself as a person.
And to top it off, when visiting and portaging through the wild, you may encounter an incredible variety of wildlife, including moose, wolves, bears, and bald eagles. Senator Kelly Morrison wraps it up by saying,
being in this beautiful, unspoiled place is pretty magical.
The Boundary Waters is the historic homeland of Native American tribes, most prominently inhabited by the Ojibwe people. They first traveled the waterways in birch bark canoes. In 1688 came the first European traveler to traverse these woods. His name was Jacques de Noyon. He brought more attention to the site. Later, more French-Canadian voyagers and fur traders traversed and traded throughout the region. In the late 1800s, loggers came on the scene, and by the early 1900s, the land was expeditiously being cleared out. After the health of the Boundary Waters, wildlife was plummeting in the 1900s due to the excessive cultivation of its resources. Activists began advocating for the ecosystem's protection in the 1920s. However, the safety of the BWCA was still unstable. There was no protection of overflights of planes that threatened the canoe country. It was then signed into an executive order by President Truman, which prohibited aircrafts from flying over the area below 4,000 feet above sea level. This diminished human disturbances. But many more human-made threats posed against the wilderness. So soon after much organization-based advocacy, the 1964 Wilderness Act was signed into law by President Johnson. This act established the National Wilderness Preservation System, which is considered a pivotal conservation effort for America's public lands. However, it didn't protect the land from everything. Harmful activity was still allowed, such as limited motorboats, some mining, and some logging. So, of course, people abused and pushed these powers. Another group came along that focused on obtaining the BWCA's natural resources and started petitioning to split the wilderness into two areas, with one area being completely released of protection. But in opposition to the split, a nonprofit organization created by Bud Heiselman in 1976, Friends of the Boundary Waters, was formed. They fought hard for its protection, and finally, in 1978, signed into law by President Carter, the whole area was designated as a wilderness area, which meant it was protected from further development. Since then, organizations alike have worked to protect the Boundary Waters. Despite its protected status, the Boundary Waters still faces threats. As Senator Kelly Morrison summarizes,
One that's in the news a lot and that's on a lot of people's minds is this threat of copper sulfide mining coming to Minnesota. It's this kind of mining that's never been done in Minnesota before. It's known as the most toxic industry in the United States. And there are a couple of international mining conglomerates who are trying to come and do this kind of mining near Lake Superior and near the Boundary Waters.
Twin Metals obtained, long ago, a mineral permit before protection was a priority and was attempting to renew it. However, in 2016, the Forest Service concluded copper sulfide mining posed high risk to a water-rich environment and did not consent to renew their mineral lease. Twin Metals' leases expired and their dangerous project was eradicated. But the outlook of 2016 didn't seem good for the Boundary Waters' future. In 2016 election, Trump won. Antofagasta, a Chilean mining company who bought out Twin Metals to reattempt for their leases, began heavily lobbying the Trump administration. They even went so far as to rent a mansion for Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. The administration then illegally revived and renewed the leases. However, the Department of Interior was doing their job, so it was noticed, and announced the Trump administration's decision to renew the leases violated laws and regulatory standards, so canceled the leases. The next attempting intruder came in with sharper teeth. The Boundary Waters were in danger. Polynet was the next mining company planning to cause irreparable damage to the BWCA. Their plan was to extract trace amounts of copper and nickel from sulfide-bearing ores, which results in sulfuric acid, in other words, battery acid. Polynet's written best-case end scenario would release 16 million gallons of polluted water into the ground each year to cut costs. They proposed a 250-foot dam to restore 225 million tons of reactive mine waste. It would cover the unlined tailing basin in a 900-acre pond, a method called, quote, wet closure, end quote, and would remain indefinitely. The unlined basin cannot prevent chemicals and heavy metals from seeping into the groundwater. The, air quotes, solution the DNR approved, with a little lobbying in there, was to add bentonite-AM dead barrier, which will be a thin layer of soil that will limit the oxidation of tailings intended to, quote, ensure that reactive mine waste within is stored where waste is no longer reactive. However, it's an unproven method that may destabilize the basin, end quote. The DNR expert consultants also called this method a, quote, Hail Mary type of concept. It would exacerbate erosion and will eventually fail, end quote. Kelly Morrison adds on to this point by saying,
this kind of mining has never been done without having a major pollution event, and it's particularly ill-suited to that very water-rich environment in northeastern Minnesota.
And to add on to the catastrophe in the making, their dam design was produced by the same engineer that designed the Brumahindo Dam in Brazil, which collapsed and killed over 200 people. Now, this dam design is banned in Brazil. Shouldn't Minnesota have higher standards? Polynet's proposed mine would also involve the largest destruction of peat and marshland in Minnesota history. It would destroy our most effective carbon sink.
So it's a threat to our air, our water, our land, our wildlife, and ultimately to the Minnesota taxpayer, because the way the financial assurances are set up with these deals, the company is sort of off the hook, and so the Minnesota taxpayer will be left to clean up the mess that it inevitably leaves behind.
And taxpayers, if some cash doesn't bother you, start looking into the most expensive upgrade for your water system. Polynet's mining will poison the St. Louis River, which flows downstream into Lake Superior, and will fill your water with carcinogens and heavy metals such as mercury, lead, and arsenic, and other toxins, which will harm residents of Duluth and Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. But the majority owner of Polynet, Glencore, a Swiss mining and commodities giant with a dark history behind it, would be legally responsible for none of their wrongdoings due to not being named on the permit. They would avoid all liabilities completely. But even after it was revealed that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the EPA, attempted to suppress concerns that the wastewater permit would allow, which violated the Clean Water Act, the DNR issued the final state permit for PolyNet. But their boatload of money could only lobby so much. Their lousy permits raised red flags for scientists, engineers, financial experts, and the public. 1 year later, the Minnesota Court of Appeals threw out the permits and two of the dam safety permits, citing, quote, serious justifiable concerns, end quote. Yeah. It was no secret that these mining companies had an evil agenda. They were putting their profits ahead of the health and safety of the environment and the people who depend on it. They ignored the potential risks and pushed for permits to begin reeling in cash. Thankfully, there are organizations like the Friends of the Boundary Waters that I cited a couple times in this podcast, and many others that are fighting to continue to protect this natural treasure. They have been working tirelessly to raise awareness of the risks of copper sulfide mining and to push for legislation to protect the area. Thanks to their efforts, Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz has taken action to protect the Boundary Waters. He has issued a temporary moratorium on the mining in the area, which gives lawmakers time to study the potential risks and develop new policies to protect the region. Additionally, Kelly Morrison gives us some insight into her legislation work.
I'm authoring a bill that we've named the Taxpayer Protection Act that asks those mining companies to provide adequate financial assurances to clean up the kinds of messes that this sort of mining creates up front, so that they have to pay enough to cover those damages rather than after the fact, because what happens is they'll declare bankruptcy and leave the state. So this would be a way to hold them accountable. And this is sort of a growing movement in many different industries of having the industry that creates the pollution and the damage to be held accountable and to help participate in paying for the damage that's done. The Boundary Waters Permanent Protection Act is another one that I'm carrying that would ban hard rock mining. So not the traditional iron ore mining that we're used to in Minnesota, but this hard rock copper sulfide mining from the watershed of the Boundary Waters on state lands. So it just creates a bigger buffer zone around the Boundary Waters to protect it from this kind of mining. There's a bill on the federal level that's been carried by Representative Betty McCollum. It does the same thing, but on federal lands. There is one more piece of legislation that I'm not authoring, but I'm a co-author on, called Prove It First, which asks mining companies to just demonstrate that they are able to do this kind of mining without polluting for 10 years. And then after they've closed a mine like this, to ensure that no pollution has occurred for 10 years after they've closed it. No company has ever been able to prove that. But it seems like a reasonable bar when we're talking about Lake Superior, which holds 11% of the world's fresh water, and the Boundary Waters, which is this unique crown jewel of Minnesota and in the world.
Well, it's inspiring to see the incredible efforts being made to protect the Boundary Waters. This natural wonder is a national treasure, and it's vital that we work together to protect it for future generations to come. The Boundary Waters is a shining example of the power of activism and advocacy. It's up to us to stand up for what we believe in and fight for the things we hold dear. I'd like to thank the Blake School Environmental Science Program and research support staff for helping source, cite, and fact-check this podcast. I'd also like to thank Kelly Morrison, Reese Willoughby, and Dale Hansen for taking the time to talk to me about the BWCA. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe, rate, leave a review, and check out the other podcasts in our series. Thank you!